The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Greetings to you, friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family on our podcast. And holy Lord in heaven, we've got a blazer for you today. First, some backstory. When I was in high school, I became obsessed with an author, Robert Monroe. He wrote a bunch of books, the most famous being Journeys Out of the Body, which are his accounts of the experiences he had when he figured out how to do something you've probably heard of, astral projection. Now, this is a very old idea, maybe one of the oldest ideas. Different cultures have different ways of expressing it, but essentially the idea is you can like launch yourself out of the sheath of your body and fly around the material universe. Now, do we really have a soul that can launch itself out of a sheath that we call our body? I don't know. There's all kinds of weird stuff wrapped up in astral projection, a kind of silvery cord that connects you to your body, that tethers you to your body. And if that cord should be cut, you're out of here, baby. Again, I don't know if we actually have a soul or some kind of astral aspect to us that can fly outside of the body. I don't know. I speculate that astral projection is really just a form of lucid dreaming, but who knows? I speculate it could be a way to induce sleep paralysis, that thing you've probably experienced where you wake up, you can't move. Some people claim that they feel like an old lady sitting on their chest. There's lots of stories about it, documentaries about it. Truly, I don't know. But when I was in high school, I diligently began studying Robert Monroe's techniques of astral projection, his methods of relaxing and all of the ways that you're supposed to come out of your body by like rolling out of it. Lots of weird little tricks. I could never pull it off. But my mom had a tape, a hypnotic tape on astral projection. And for a while, every night I would listen to it. I still remember it. It would sort of try to relax you by having you imagine that you're on an escalator or something. And then after you fell asleep, it would continue and seed you with the methods or the ways to come out of your body. Most importantly, it would sort of implant in you the belief that this is something you could achieve. So one morning I was skipping school and laying in bed, I'd fallen asleep, and you know that wonderful, deep, relaxing sleep you used to get in high school when you were skipping school and went to bed? I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but 4 stars level of sleep. I was deep asleep. And then I thought I heard somebody knocking on the door of our house. I woke up and suddenly my fan was right in my face. Now, in those days, I was taking LSD all the time. So my first thought was, oh, this is some kind of acid flashback. And then I kind of drifted around and saw myself asleep in bed and realized that my mom's hypnotapes had actually worked. I was doing astral projection. It was not what I had fantasized. What I had fantasized was like I'd be able to fly around, spy on people, go through walls, do anything I wanted. But this was terrifying. There was a sense of a dark, looming presence in the room, and I just wanted to get back in my body. So somehow I managed to float down to my body. I floated through my body and landed on the floor underneath my bed, and then opened my eyes and I was wide awake. After that, it happened, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 more times. Each time was pretty scary and I never really liked it. Maybe that's why I can't do it anymore, though I have tried a few times. There's lots of methods out there if you're interested in doing astral projection. Journeys Out of the Body is probably the best place you could go. If you're interested in lucid dreaming, there's lots of techniques out there. One of them is really, really curious. The idea is you sort of set a timer on your watch, and every hour your alarm goes off and you think to yourself, am I dreaming? And if you're not dreaming, you just go back to your regular life. But if you do this long enough, then what will happen is in a dream, your alarm will go off and you will be lucid dreaming. You'll be able to enjoy what it's like to have some kind of conscious control over your dreams. And this is something that for sure people can do. You might have experienced it yourself. In fact, it's one of the best things that can happen, isn't it? When you're having a nightmare and suddenly you remember that you're in a dream, like right away the nightmare transforms. Now, in this incredible book written by today's guest, Tenzin Wangyo Rinpoche, The Tibetan Yogas of Dream and Sleep, all of this gets kind of turned on its head. Instead of setting alarms or reminding yourself throughout the day that you're awake, you do the opposite. Throughout the day, you actually tell yourself, this is a dream too. What's the difference? It's still like a dream. Now, that is a very psychedelic practice. It's incredible and weird, and I still remember reading about it and just being overwhelmed by that thought experiment, the thought experiment of wondering to yourself, what if this is a dream, this thing that we call being awake? Maybe it's a more consistent dream. Maybe it's a more stable dream. And whenever I'm dreaming, I'm sort of jumping from one incarnation to the next, to the next, to the next. But, you know, if you think about any given life, you're jumping from one incarnation to the next, to the next, to the next, even while you're alive. I mean, in the same way, dreams have that weird fluid quality to them where you don't really question the how strange it is that one second you could be sitting on a plane, the next second you might be riding a tiger. Because I guess the way we experience time when we're awake is different than when we dream, we don't notice so much how massively different things are from one year to the next, to the next, to the next. And there is a quality in that kind of transformation or fluidity of anybody's life that is very dreamlike. So that's just one little piece of Tibetan dream yoga. I mean, obviously, I'm no expert in Tibetan dream yoga, but today's guest truly is. It must be a dream because I actually got to talk to Tenzin Wangyo Rinpoche about his incredible book. And I'm really excited to share the conversation that we had. Get ready. It is a very intense, psychedelic conversation. We're going to jump right into it. But first, this.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we're back Friends, it is time for you, if you are living in Texas, to come and see me do some stand-up with the amazing William Montgomery. You probably know him from Kill Tony. He's hilarious. I'm going to be in Fort Worth in Dallas. That's November 11th and November 12th. You can find all of these dates and the links at duncantrussell.com. I'm going to be at Hyenas Comedy Club, so I hope you will come see me there. Did you know I have a Patreon? We hang out every week. I hope you will join us. It's patreon.com/DTFH. Okay, everybody, let's do it. Today's guest, Tenzin Wangyo Rinpoche, is the founder and spiritual director of Lingmingxia International. He is a world famous meditation teacher. He teaches the Bon Buddhist tradition of Tibet, and he has written a lot of amazing books. The Tibetan Yogas of Dream and Sleep, it's just one of his incredible books. I hope you will check out all of his writing. And if you're lucky enough to live near him, you could actually, he teaches. So you could go to one of his retreats, or you could go to one of the Lingmingxia centers. You can find all of those at lingmingxia.org. And of course, the links are going to be at duncantrussell.com if you feel drawn to Tenzin's incredible teachings and his amazing way of just cutting right to the essence of things. This is what happens when you are a practicing monk, Tibetan teacher. And honestly, just getting a chance to Zoom with him was really intense. Being around people like him, it's the most inspiring thing. The clarity, the sharpness, the vividness, and also just how cool they are. I feel so lucky that I got a chance to hang out with him. So please welcome to the DTFH, Tenzin Wangyo Rinpoche. Rinpoche, welcome to the DTFH. I'm thrilled to meet you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I have a question to start off, and I think this will help us jump right into dream yoga, which I am really interested in. In your book, you say, if we lose ourselves every night, what chance do we have to be aware when death comes? So I was wondering, why do we need to be aware when death comes?
The role of awareness is always the same. I think every single moment in our life, the moment you're aware, more good chance that you are more connected to yourself, good chance that you will not lose yourself, not lose things. Like even when you lose phone, I often lose my iPhone.
Same. You know?
So I remember when I keep my phone somewhere, I'm looking at myself saying, I'm putting here, I'm putting you here, and I'm aware of you, and I'm going to pick it up back.
Yes.
So if I'm not aware, so usually as you put somewhere, you forget, and you forget to pick it up, you lose it.
Yes.
So during the moment of the death, it's so important that you are aware of yourself so you don't get lost in the pardo, in the intermediate state.
Now, the bardo, the intermediate state, let's imagine someone dies in an unaware state. What can they expect in the bardo? And what is the thing within the bardo that is experiencing anything at all, as opposed to a person who dies with awareness.
Yeah, so it's a similar thing that even during the daytime, so there are so many moments people get completely lost. They kill people, they suicide themselves, they bring a lot of harms in the society. In the very moment when they are not aware, they are completely caught up in their deep pain stories and depressions and anxieties. Yes. So if they are aware of those moments, they are able to see, oh, I'm not happy, I'm very down, I feel very negative, but I should be more aware the consequences of what I do and what I say. So even having that awareness, you protect yourself more when to talk and when not to talk, when to act and when not to act. Same way in the Pardo, it's more serious because it's not a transition of a day or week or month. It's a transition of life. Mm. If you're going to go in the wrong direction, you go for all the entire lifetime. So if you go in the right direction, you go for entire lifetime. It's not like doing a mistake, leaving your phone or doing a wrong turn in the highway.
Gotcha. It's sort of like going to a movie theater, except the movie lasts for your entire lifetime. You want to pick a good movie. You just don't want to run into any theater. You might end up in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, exactly,
I got it.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you. In your book, you point out something that I don't think many of us have considered. We spend one third of our lives sleeping. And to bring back to what you said initially, and even when we're awake, where were we when we lost our phone? Where were we when we lost our keys? If you add to that one third the times in the day when we're not there, it seems like we're barely here at all. So
yes, really scary.
It's scary, but I'm curious, yes, where in those moments where we have lost our phone, where are we? Like, what from your perspective, what has become of us? What was there? What happened?
Yeah, and I think as every spiritual tradition talk about the famous be in the present moment. Present moment is a gift of our life. So what happened is most of the time we get lost. Before we lose our phone, we get lost ourselves. Before we get turned wrong turn, we get lost ourselves. So before we lose it, take a wrong direction in the intermediate state of Pardo, we get lost ourselves. So I think the main thing is we get lost in our pain stories, samsaric stories. We have so much stories. So, and we, not only we have so much stories of the past, and constantly we are always creating stories in every given moment. Instead of resting a little bit for a moment, we lack rest.
Okay, right. Yes, even sometimes I will fall asleep, and it hasn't happened as much, but sometimes I'll wake up more tired than when I went to sleep. I don't know if I doubt you have because you are a Rinpoche, but I don't know if you ever had the experience where you fall asleep and in your dream you work. Have you ever had that happen? Like there wasn't even a...
Yeah, so sometimes definitely that happens. So I think, when you are sleeping, it depends on what kind of quality sleep you have, how deep you're sleeping, how long you're sleeping, so how much your sleep is interrupted or not. It factors in so many different things. So when you do sleep, like a power nap, it could be like a 20-minute, you sleep, you come back with so much more clarity. Yes. And awareness. Rather than putting that 20 minute working so hard, trying to be more clear, trying to be more aware and exhaust yourself, you don't have any more energy to be clear. it's better to sleep and wake up and more clarity than trying to be clear and lose little energy to full clarity you have. That mistake we do all the time in our life.
Gotcha.
Particularly in the West, we think working harder, doing more is better. No, taking break, getting rest, you recover better.
Long term, you're going to be way more productive.
Yeah. Even in a short time, you know, even in afternoon, when you're trying to drink double espresso and trying to do something, it's better to not drink double espresso, take a short nap and wake up. It's right there. You're much better.
Well, you know, in the West, if there is a spiritual component to sleeping, generally that it's, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen, I think they're sort of silly. The websites, I dreamed of a bird. They'll say, oh, you dreamed of a bird. It means money is coming or something ridiculous like that. As opposed to what you teach, which is, I clearly remember the experience I had reading your book. I remember the feeling as you were inviting me to see waking life as a dream. Oh, what an odd sense came over me. I don't want to say unnerving, but I just don't think I'd spent any amount of time considering the dreamlike quality of waking life, at least in the way you were able to dial it in your wonderful book. So this thing that you are teaching, it's not like even the Jungian archetypes or anything like that. It's much deeper than that. Can you talk about it, this idea that there is actually some opportunity for a spiritual practice within the dreaming state? Before I read your book, I'd never even heard of that before.
Sure. So I think, you know, in our life, we all need to take a break from our ego, stories of our ego, stories of our pain, stories of our conflict, the push of our ego to always trying to do something, achieve something, compete someone. This whole energy draining machine that we have running 24/7, we need to learn how to take a break. And naturally, sometimes we do take a break. So like a sleeping, when you sleep, you're supposed to sleep deep and good quality. When you're taking a weekend, you're supposed to take a good weekend off. When you're taking a family time, a good family time off. Or even the idea of intermittent fasting, you know, like a fasting. In our culture, we do fast in between the food. In a Western culture, in American culture, you have a snack culture. you have big meals, and in between big meals, you have a snack. So many snacks. Yes. So you're never giving a break to your organs, particularly your liver. And your liver is getting drained again and again and again. It's like having a bad boss. You're given a task, and before you finish that, you're given another task. Before you finish that, you have a bigger task. So we need this really break in our system. So sleep yoga and dream yoga is saying you are taking a break anyway. Learn to take it better and apply your spiritual awareness in them. So that one third of your life, not completely lost. There's some development is happening.
You make a distinction. I wonder if you could talk about the distinction between the sort of sleep that could result from this yoga versus what most of us think of as sleep. Like when I think of sleep, I think I lay down and I get a little dimmer. Maybe I'll feel how good the pillow feels, the mattress feels good. There's some moment where my body will jerk. Then I'll have a series of weird dreams, maybe, and wake up in the morning. This is how I sleep. Can you talk about the difference between that kind of non-yogic sleep and the sleep that you're talking about?
Yeah, so basically we think about three different kinds of sleep. One, we call sleep of clear light. the most important, most profound experience is the sleep of clear light. Sleep of clear light is when you are able to totally rest deep enough, so there all your conceptual mind, story of the day, pain of your emotions, none of them will interfere your higher quality of sleep. You know, we know sometimes some days are the better sleep.
Yes.
Other days is a worse sleep. The better sleep is when you think, oh, my day was productive, my day was great, I have my family visiting me, I love them, they love me. You have a wonderful day experience, you go to sleep. You're a good night's sleep. So you will sleep well. Next morning you feel, you know, more like a rested, more uplifting, more and positive energy. But the day when it hits you, your boss fires you, your family have rejected you, you have deep emotional crisis inside you, your fear is completely up. So like night like that, when you go to sleep, you don't, you know, you wait. Of course, first you don't go to sleep. You maybe go pieces of sleep. You have nightmares. You wake up totally exhausted. So the whole entire life is like that. So it's not so much question about what happens to you. It's more what you do with or how you process what happens to you. So sometimes negative experiences can happen. If you know how to handle them better, you still go to sleep okay. Sometimes you have a good day, but the last morning you have one bad thought. That you don't need more. One single bad thought after a whole good day is enough to mess up all
yes.
night.
Yes, my mind is good at producing those thoughts. Incredible, in fact, like a terrible heckler right before I'm falling asleep. Amazing. So, okay, the sleep of clear light. Some mornings, after what you just described, rejection from the family, some horrible fight, something rotten's going on, I'll wake up in the best mood ever, feeling so good. And then within a few seconds, it's like my mind reminds me what happened the night before. Is that the clear light that you're talking about? It's this kind of
The clear light is, it's the moment all your pain stories dissolves like a water. You know, when you don't shake it, like a little spring water, when you shake it, it's a muddy. And when you leave it for a couple of hours, all the rocks and stones goes down, all the leaves comes up in the middle, is the crystal clear water.
Yes.
So your mind, when you go to sleep, when you're able to let go, able to rest, then your mind becomes completely clear, like an autumn sky. We say autumn sky, no clouds.
Yes.
And then that experience in sleep, it's called clear light sleep, where you are able to be aware of that inner sky, inner light, without any stories or pain. That's when you're really able to see yourself and experience yourself without all the thoughts and emotions, that's a clear light experience. But when we say sleep of samsara means sleep where you have dreams. Every single dream, it's your samsaric stories. It has something to do with your activity of the day. It has something to do with how you think about that, how you see about
yes.
it, how you feel about it, all your stories related with it. When that becomes a dominating factor and take over, and you produce a lot of dreams.
Yes.
So that becomes, it's called samsaric sleep.
Yes.
Means you have stories,
yes.
dreams. Sometimes we call clear light sleep, a clear light dream. Clear light dream is dream more predictable dreams, dream in which you can meet teachers, dream in which you can connect with your inner sources, get a lot of information, inner knowledge from yourself, from other beings, other masters.
Yes.
So these are different kind of sleep and dreams.
From time to time, I have dreams where people were Tibetan Buddhist monks give me Dharma talks. And I love it when it happens. I'll wake up in the morning and I can't remember much of what they taught, but it's like I'm sitting in a lecture hall, or they're just teaching. So who are those people? Or do you, when you are not doing your retreats, do you go into people's dreams and teach them?
No, I think it's more like I have dreams like that with my teachers. I regularly visit him. He regularly appears in my dream. I regularly ask questions. He regularly answers my questions. Then I sometimes very, very long and very impressive, very sequential. And I ask him, you know, I would say, do you come in my dream? He would smile. So basically, I think it's not so much that he's coming in me or in my dream, more that I'm creating a space in my higher self, which is becoming as a form of teacher, the teacher that I know, outer world. So that outer teacher, my inner teacher, they come together. One is the essence, one is a form, but it's communicating to me. So my higher self is communicating me. My outer teacher is communicating me with my higher self. Whatever way you wanted to look at, I think that's how I see it.
That makes a lot of sense. My method, which please don't judge me for this when I say method, but it's very lazy, I guess you would say. When I'm falling asleep, I will ask for that, or I'll put that into my last thoughts, and then sometimes I get lucky and it'll happen. Not all the time. A lot of the times I'm just running from a ghost or something, but sometimes it works. And I guess I'm interested in the distinction between this and astral projection, lucid dreaming, and the various sort of, you know, new age spiritual methods that allow you to, you know, come into waking space, but in the astral form.
Yeah, I think, you know, the astral trip, out of body experiences could be very beneficial if it's guided properly, if with the knowledge. And sometimes I tell them, you know, you guys are always too much out of the body anyway. If you want to learn something, you have to learn how to embody yourself, how to be in your body, not out of your body, because most of the time you are out of your body.
Yes, yes, for sure. That's hilarious. So, okay, that's a wonder. Thank you. I get that. Well, this idea of the story, it's very controversial to some people. Some people, they feel quite committed to the story. You know, if you suggest when someone is expressing discontent that this is a story that you're telling yourself, that there might be more to you than just this story, or that there maybe you're telling a story to make sense of some fundamental suffering, but the story is not quite as real as the suffering. Could you talk a little bit more about this tendency in human beings to sort of instantaneously produce an explanatory reason for all of the pain that seems to go along with being in a human body?
Yeah, I think one main thing from Buddhist perspective is it's always human beings always have an identity crisis. You know, I mean, in the West, you know, you say about identity crisis, we think about, yeah, people have identity crisis, you know, middle-aged people having identity crisis. Yes. When their body is weak, they get a stronger car, you know, like. So
that's what I did. I have a big truck.
Fancy car or something like that. Or when people lose their job, sometimes it's not, they get into so much pain because of their losing their sense of identity, power, position. And teenage, you know, when they are going through struggles, they're trying to look for themselves, you know, trying to separate themselves from their parents and trying to find themselves who they are, identity crisis. A war in Russia, a war in Ukraine and Russia right now is identity crisis. You know, it's identity crisis. So you, instead of becoming an enemy, you can become a friend. You know, one of the best way to resolve the conflict in two countries to become closer, not trying to take over each other.
Yes.
So like people come, I mean, you see in the US, there's all these different states becoming a one as a one country, rather than, you know, thinking about old times, still fighting between Texas and California. I don't know what. You know.
Yes.
So it's a, between even two people, you know, you can have a conflict, you can argue and fight all the time, or you can, maybe the best solution is how to connect with each other, how to become friends. So friendship is a solution for conflict, not the war.
Mm.
Right? So I think that it's always the issue of identity. This is what it is. So when you don't know who you are, you're always trying to be something, someone.
Yes.
And always there's something someone has to create a story to be it.
Right.
So even in a dream, you might not be you, what you think who you are. You might be somebody else. Sometimes you can dream about being animals.
Yes.
You can dream about, man can dream about being a woman. Woman can dream about being man, or human can dream about being tiger.
Yes.
You know, or maybe the monkeys, can they dream about being human? I don't know. So it's always the identity is what, crisis of identity is what creates all these stories of pain.
Mm. So there's this possibility, and I think many of my listeners have heard of this possibility, the possibility being that via some spiritual practice, a reacquaintance with something that is not so transient, I think it must be the clear light that you're talking about, could relieve this identity crisis. It could show you that there's a more stable.
Yeah, so for example, if somebody tells you, you know, if somebody ask you a story of your pain, you will have a lot of stories to tell. You will say, I broke up with this, I lost this, this conflict. You can have a lot of story of the past. And then maybe you can have also a lot of stories of the future. You say, I'm hoping this, I'm hoping that, I'm hoping this will happen.
Yes.
And but if you say, what's your problem right now here? I'm not interested in your past story. I'm not interested in what you're hoping in the future. What's your problem right now?
Right.
And you look at right now here, you look at right and left and up and down and here, I don't have any problem. That's it.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to be in the moment, you don't have so much a problem. And if you are aware of that, you can have less. I say you will be less affected by your past and the future if you are more in the present moment, because it doesn't allow the stories so much in the present moment.
Okay, well, let's imagine you and I have been sentenced to death. We are both hanging out just before going out to the gallows. And you say to me, what's our problem right now? I'm going to say, they're about to hang us. We're doomed. This is creating all kinds of anxiety in me, even if I'm in the present moment. Maybe we can even see the gallows right over there. So how does this work in situations like that? Imminent doom.
Yeah. So in those situations, first of all, of course, I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying we are playing the same game. We have a notion of death. And you have an idea of death is bad.
Yes. Yes.
You have an idea of death is failure. And you have an idea of, particularly where you are, the way you're going to die, you have all these stories. Without those stories, you will not have a problem.
Wow.
Well, the stories is death. Dying, like death, you know, when you take a nap, would you say, you know, it's a problem?
No.
Because you say a nap is good. When you say, I will wake up in half an hour. When you say death, that is a problem. But you're going to wake up in 49 days as a different, another life. It's the story that we have.
But, I mean, not to keep going back to the story I just told. When I take a nap, I don't hang myself prior to falling asleep. I mean, though I do get the comparison, and I do get the comparison, I just... And I love.
I think the main idea here is the story that we. It's not about the death and nap. It's the story that you have around the death and nap. What creates the problem? Death is not creating a problem. Death is not a personal problem. It happens to everybody. It happened to Christ. Happened to Buddha. And it will happen to every single powerful people. It can. It will happen to everybody on this earth right now. In 100 years. Maybe none of these people will be here, all these people right now.
I mean, it seems like in a few months that's possible, the way things are going in the world.
Yeah.
So it's a natural, this is something that, but I do, thank you for this, because I don't think I ever quite connected the fact that I'm telling, that I'm, is, I always think, I understand the add-ons in Buddhism. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, your example is, I think, a little bit extreme for people, but every given moment, every single day, you have a stories. There's an event, and there's a stories. And the story is, you can, the people who are in a very depressed, they will have a different stories of the same event. People who are positive, they will have a different version of that story. People who are successful, they look for solution. They don't talk about problem. People have fail a lot. They're not interested in the solution. They're attracted to talking about problem.
Right.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I want to talk about the mother of the story, the mother of the story. Like, for me, some kind of pain, some kind of suffering, then that is when I invent, oh, well, I want to know why I don't feel so good. Here's why I don't feel so good. I don't feel so good because I didn't get enough sleep, or I'm worried about this or that. But underneath the story, that suffering, what is it? Or are you saying that when we annihilate the story goes away, suffering naturally goes away? Instantly, that would go away too.
Yeah. So, as I said earlier, underlying the story is the pain identity. The father will have a pain of father story, not the mother story.
Right.
The mother will have a mother story, not father story. The business person will have the story, pain story of business related, not as a parent. So if you look at every pain story, it's associated to a single identity. And this identity sometimes is very flexible. That means, you know, usually we say, I'm no one and I can be anyone. I'm someone, it's hard to be someone else. When you in a whole idea in a Buddhism, they say, you're no one. What you're identifying is just identity. You are identifying with it, but you are not that. You're not a lawyer. You're not a doctor. You have a role of lawyer. It's a professional role you're playing as a lawyer, but you are not lawyer. So when you are, you're able to separate what you do. Basically, another word, you are not what you do.
Okay. Now. You are,
and you have to be free. You have to be free from what you do, and do it better, and you will do it better.
You are a father. How many children do you have, if you don't mind me asking?
Just one.
How old?
16.
16. So, what's it like being a renowned Rinpoche and a dad to a teenager?
Well, that I think the beauty is that, you know, I think I feel that all the teaching, the practices, they help me reflect differently. I don't have to look at one way. I feel I have option to look different ways, because I feel something. I can see where that feeling is coming from. I can trace back to that one single identity. Then I realize I do not have to be that. I am not that. I can be more than that, beyond that. I'm free from that. Then I'm able to deal with the situation much better. Deal with the situation better does not mean necessarily being passive. Sometimes you have to be strong.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to be soft. But what you need to do, be when and what kind of kid, these decisions, it happens in the second.
Yeah. How do you ever find yourself forgetting this? Like, do you ever find yourself wrapped up in?
Of course.
And do you have tricks for?
I don't have a trick. I have awareness. You know, I don't have a trick. So I have to. First, whatever is happening to you, self-observation is the most important human beings has. I think one of the greatest gifts that we have, ability to look ourselves and look, analyze ourselves. I'm feeling this. Do I have to feel this? Or why I'm feeling this? I'm feeling this because I expect some respect. I have a pain identity who feel lack of respect. Mm. And that place of lack of respect, I am reacting to this situation.
Mm.
And when I realize that, that's all what I need, not to be too caught up with the story.
Got it.
I can see where it's connected. It's not you or someone. It's me.
Mm-hmm.
When I know it's coming out of me and one aspect of me, I feel more free.
This autumn sky, I love that, but I love autumn. It's my favorite time of year. Blue sky. And yet, here we are. Clouds, right? This pain body thing, it's a cloud.
It's cloud.
Now, the cloud, even though if you even catch a slight...
Cloud is okay, not the storm like in Florida.
Yeah, hurricane. That's me.
Hurricane.
That's, yeah, when I meditate, I'm flying one of those planes into the hurricane. That's what it's like. But this pain body, I know that, like, from the perspective of the sky, doesn't the pain body kind of not deserve respect, but deserve love? Or I mean, gosh, what a mess to find yourself, even if you are a temporary, transient, wispy clump of knotted stories, you still are something, right? Like, you still, this thing, I'm just saying, within this possibility of, I'm not the neurotic cloud, there's still the cloud somehow. It's still there. So.
Yeah. So, you know, in my book, Tibetan Yogas of Dream and Sleep, which is now new revised version is coming out with Shambhala. And so, and that in that book, you know, we talk about different dream, so different kind of dream, different kind of sleep. And in order to make some changes to this pain identity, if you are not able to do it during the waking state, you might be able to do it in the night. So how to do those change? You go to sleep with one personality, you wake up with another personality. We hope that.
Wow. It could be that dramatic. It could be that radical. I found it interesting in one of the lectures of yours that I watched. You were talking about how this is, you know, everyone, you didn't say these words, so forgive. This is coming from me, Neurotic Cloud. That's my spiritual name, Neurotic Cloud. We know meditation. We know yoga in the day. But this is considered just as much a valid path as meditation, just as much a valid way to wake up as all the others. So
What especially in a dream and sleep, what is important is that, you know, just before you go to sleep, one of the very important emphasis, they say it's so important. One of the two moments is a very important moment in life. One before you die, one before you go to sleep. Wow. Whatever thoughts and emotion you have before you go to sleep, very important, it will impact the rest of your night. When you die, before your last breath, whatever thoughts and emotion, even what object that you are looking at, will impact all the process of journey of the death. So it's very important. So in the dream yoga and sleep yoga, it teaches, you know, trying to do something called nine breathing or purification, do some kind of breathing, be aware of your thought, emotions, breathe them out, find a very restful place and let go. And then find a deep resting place to sleep. So you kind of preparing yourself. If you manage to succeed that, let's say in 5 minutes, you do your little practice, your little tricks. And then when you go to sleep, you manage to, you go to sleep for 6 hours, 4 hours. For during this 4 hours, you are able to maintain that autumn sky. That light, because you just enter in there. During the waking state, it interrupts very often. You know, I have a first second, I have a good thought, and 1 minute later, I have a bad thought. There's more frequent interruptions. Right. In the sleep, no. For example, when you say, I wanted to wake up 5 a.m. because I have to take a flight, you put that memory there. And next morning, you wake up around 5 o'clock very often.
Yes.
So that memory stays rest of the night.
Right. Whoa, gotcha. That's amazing. So,
you know, if you meditate for 5 minutes and then you wake up after 4 hours, you meditated for 4 hours. But if you went to depress in a 5 minute and slept five hours in that state of depression, you are depressed for 5 hours. That's why you know why you wake up so bad mood.
Wow, I gotta stop looking at my phone when I go to sleep. What am I doing? I look at the most terrible things. I watch Ukrainian war footage and then I fall asleep. I gotta stop.
Yeah, I do too sometimes.
You do?
Yeah, I watch the war story a little bit more than I should.
It's very absorbing. It's a big story. It's a planetary story. It's very absorbing. Yeah. Could you, and forgive me because I know that this is the kind of thing you teach over, you know, months to truly learn it. But is there a way for listeners, could you maybe teach us just a little bit about a simple practice to do before we fall asleep?
Sure. So I think for beginners, I think it's important throughout the day, trying to be as much as aware as possible. Trying to be aware of, you know, what you're feeling, how you're responding to the world. Like, I'm happy what somebody said, I'm unhappy what somebody said. Being aware of your thoughts and emotions, And when you're aware of your thoughts and emotions, seeing who is upset, the identity, when you're able to see, oh, I'm upset for no reason, or maybe I'm upset because this morning I was in a not good mood, then I am throwing this to my wife, my friend, someone, you know, you recognize something, you know. So throughout the day, trying to have some control over your own thoughts and emotion, not totally driven by it. So during the daytime, I think that's important to do that. So just calm down, calm down, calm down, self-reflect, calm down, self-reflect, calm down. And then before go to sleep, think about, you know, sleep is, get excited. Think about sleep is a journey to inner temple, sacred temple, sacred journey. Look forward. And then the last moment before you go to sleep, look at what happened during the daytime, process them a little bit. Look at what's happening that particular moment before you go to sleep. You are almost ready to close your eye, already close your eye. Look at, you have a thought, a one single thought of discomfort thought is sitting there with you. And you are aware of that. Just bring the light of awareness to that one single negative thought, unprocessed thought, and bring awareness in your breath, and through your breath, breathe out. You know, breathe out that single thought, breathe out that single feeling, breathe out whatever tensions in your body, wherever these tensions are held. You breathe out that, like there's a deep exhalation, like 5 to 6 seconds, count 5 to 6 seconds, deep and slow breathing out. And breathe in like about 4 seconds in, deep breathing in. You repeat this maybe 5-10 times, then you're clear. You have the pass to go to sleep. And once you go into sleep, you will have amazing experiences. You sleep better, sleep clearer. You might have a positive energy charging. You might even experience a clear light. But you have to do this little process before you go to sleep.
I love that. Thank you. That's very simple. I remember in the book, there's also poses, aren't there? There's ways of sleeping, holding your body. I mean, this gets quite detailed.
There's a lot in the book. So I think if, of course, I would, you know, those who are interested in a dream and sleep, I would recommend to get the book, especially the new version. And now a revised version, so that this is the book not to study for a week or a month. This is a book to keep it near your pillow and rest of your life.
Okay, well, this is where I'm going to get the new edition, and I will start doing that. But friends listening, I must tell you this: I don't think I've ever encountered a more psychedelic book. I don't think I've ever encountered a thing that made me how instantaneous. It was almost too, I think I almost stopped wanting to read it, not because it wasn't interesting, because it was too much. And I remember in the book, something of a warning, like you had to tell people, look, just because you're starting to explore the this light waking life as dream, that doesn't mean.
Yeah, so if you read the book, don't think that you will understand everything right away. Don't think that you have to do everything what it says you should do. Think about step by step. Take what you're getting and take what you can do. Do what you can do. Don't worry about what you cannot do.
Right.
That's true in life, right?
Yes.
A lot of time we worry about what we are not able to do. We don't enjoy what we have done.
Yes, for sure. This is true. Yes. I mean, this is, I'm sorry to ask the question, but is this a kind of yoga that maybe you, did you hesitate to put this out into the world? Did you have a sense that maybe the world?
Yeah, traditionally, usually they are more reserved. So, but nowadays, you know, I think how much you're going to keep them reserved. So I think I believe in a, we call it in our tradition, one of the tradition, we say self-secret. Self-secret means I can keep secret from you, not talking to you, but I can also talk to you, and I will ask my angels and guardians to keep in secret those who we need to be keep secret from.
Wow.
So I will not keep it any restricted, but it will keep restricted by itself. So when the probably when moment when you want to say, oh, I don't want to read it anymore, the book saying, keep it secret from you.
Oh, now I really want to read it.
You're saying, okay, retry it again.
Okay, maybe I'm ready now. Maybe I've been given a pass to revisit. Yeah, it was beautiful. It's just, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Robert Monroe. This is the astral projection stuff. And all the other methods for inducing astral projection, which we mentioned, this is probably different from that. They usually involve reminding yourself you're awake. So your method is the exact opposite of this in the sense that you're looking around and kind of reminding yourself, this is much like a dream too. Yeah. That's the part where your angels were like, okay, don't read anymore.
Awake, when you say awake, you are awaking from what? You know, we awake from our sleep, we awake from our ignorance, we awake from our pain. You can be awake from anything. You can be awake from your sense of lost. When you found yourself, you are awakened. Right? Awake means can mean many things.
Yes. And here's my final question. And thank you for your time, and thank you for your concise answers, and thank you for this book.
So,
why are we dreaming? Why is this happening to us? Like, why has it happened that you and me and everyone on the planet right now have woken from the bardo in a human body or an animal body? Why? What's going on here? Why is the universe expressing it like this, itself like this at all? Why does the emptiness turn into clouds?
Yeah, I think there's probably two reasons. One basic reason is that we, you know, I think that just generally able to imagine, able to dream, able to have a vision, it's very important in our life, right? I was very stunned by when the September 11, the investigation about thousands of pages. In the end, there was one conclusion word. It says, Americans were not able to imagine that could happen.
Right.
So it was, you know, imagination, you need imagination. Somebody might do it in this way. So we have to be ready for protect from this way. Imagination, right? So imagination, I think dreaming, imagination, visions are very important. But it's bigger than that. I think it's a dream sometimes is happening. What we are not able to process in the day, it's happening coming up in the night. Nightmares, why nightmares come up? We're not able to work with them. That's why they show up. Why our problems? We're not able to process them. That's why they show up in our life. What we are not able to accommodate, process, and be from, they will not leave you. They will come up sooner or later.
Thank you so much. Everybody, the links you need to find this book are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Are you giving any upcoming, are you doing any tours? Or are you giving any classes?
Yeah, next week we have the Serenity Rich Dialogue in Virginia in ligmicha.org, ligmicha.org is the website. So we have a spirituality and science conference next week.
Great.
So that's the upcoming events and happening in Virginia in person and online both.
Wonderful. I'll have all those links. Thank you so much for your time. And it was very nice meeting you.
Yeah, take care. Bye.
That was Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, everybody. Again, you can find him by going to ligmincha.org. That's ligmincha.org. Big thank you to our sponsors, and much thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.